is Sandy Mays, and I am doing a talk this afternoon on visitation of the sick, how it can be good and how it can be bad. That's from my perspective as a nurse. I'm fairly recently a nurse. I went back to school after my children were in school and spent a year nursing in a doctor's office, and then just felt like if I really wanted to be a, quote, nurse, I needed to have some hospital experience and then kind of decide from there what I wanted to do in nursing. I spent a year working at Cabrini Hospital in Seattle, Washington, which is a Catholic hospital. And that had a particular influence on me because I saw the nuns, who are not doing much of the nursing there anymore, but they were very much in evidence in terms of patient advocate. And that was a very good thing, I thought. Most hospitals don't have that kind of presence. I now work at a hospital closer to my home, which is called Valley General Hospital. It's in Renton, and it's a county hospital. And I work on a medical floor. And what that means is simply that it's as opposed to surgery. The patients that I take care of generally are people who have chronic illness, who often come in and out of the hospital, who often are in the hospital for a long-term stay. It also has an age population that is older. We kind of laugh when we get a person in their 20s, because we're used to people more in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I also want to just say that my experience in working on that floor has made me very encouraged about aging, because I have, it is the norm for people to be mentally alert in their 80s, I believe, from my experience. We get so much literature, or so much, I think when we see a person who is senile, it makes such an impression on us, and we believe then that that is the norm. So that has been an encouraging side of my nursing. Also, I have been a patient in the hospital 3 times, and I think that that certainly makes me able to speak to this subject also. But all 3 times, it was times when I was going to have children. But it was complicated by the fact that 2 of those times we didn't bring a baby home. And so I was really dealing with some loss. 1 time we did bring a baby home, and that was joyful. So I view visiting people in the hospital as something of great importance. I have seen how it works in terms of being on the side of the nursing staff, and how it can be helpful and how it can be hurtful. And I felt it in terms of being a patient myself. And in terms of my own experience, as a patient.
Excuse me a second. If some more of you want to come over and sit, you know, you can sit down on the floor around this stove.
I would have been late. We got way late in conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Here, thank you. Sit right here.
But probably, you heard it, though, that I'm talking about visitation in the hospital. I was talking about the fact that I remember, in terms of being in the hospital, probably most importantly, not the nursing staff, in fact, or even my MDs. And I'm sure that what was happening there was that they were giving me the care that I needed. But what I remember about my hospitalizations were the people that visited me. And one of the things I remember when our first baby was born and didn't live, that I was having a tremendous amount of guilt, and I'm not sure where that was coming from, but I kept thinking, well, now what did I do wrong? And I remember that my aunt was visiting when I was trying to verbalize some of these feelings, and she just said to me very clearly with her hand on mine, you did nothing wrong. And that was exactly what I needed to hear. And it was just like I was being lifted up by just some very simple words by another human being. And then we had our second child, and that was our joyful experience. She's 18 now. Our third baby was born with a lot of birth defects and lived 3 months. But the most important visit for me by another person, other than Charlie and I crying together, that was meaningful. But a pastor came, and many pastors came, because they tend to be who our friends are. And most of them, we just talked together, and it was just fine. But the one I remember, I didn't know well, but he came to my bedside, and he read scripture and prayed with me. It was a very short visit, but for some reason, it was like the church had been there. So when we talk about patients in the hospital, and probably all of you or many of you have been in the hospital, and you can help me to know if this is accurate information I'm giving. But patients who come to the hospital, maybe with the exception of those who are giving birth to a baby, and I think even there you could say that there is some loss that they're feeling. But maybe if we just put them aside, patients who come to the hospital have a sense of loss. And first of all, when they come, the first thing as nursing staff that we ask them to do so that we can work with them is to take their clothes off and get in these silly hospital gowns. The next order of business is probably blood testing and some pain. Crawling into bed and then having everybody that comes in to see them standing upright while they're laying down, and so that it becomes a position of power for the one to be standing up. I think even as visitors that one should be aware of that the person who's standing or is above the other has the power in many situations. So anyway, I think that we can make a good case for the sense of loss for the person. And for most people who enter a hospital, it's short term and able to be dealt with and handled very nicely. But I do think even we had a doctor come into our hospital, and he was going to have surgery on his toe, and it was a minor surgery. And he had a cardiac arrest with the anesthesia, so that it just gave me a sense of why people feel anxious when they enter a hospital. There are things there that help you, and most of the time they do, but there are also dangers there that can make, you can certainly lose things there. So this short-term loss is what most patients feel, but there are many, many patients who come to a hospital who have long-term loss that they have to deal with, and that is very different to come and visit someone with a long-term loss. I alluded to the idea of anxiety, but I think anybody who enters a hospital for anything has some anxiety, and it could be that they have a condition that they haven't been diagnosed yet, and so that they're there for a series of tests, and that brings anxiety. Or some people just do very poorly with pain, and like drawing blood or getting shots or having IVs, the things that happen to you in the hospital are very anxiety provoking. So we'll get to the visitors now. I talked a little bit about the first thing we do to the patient is get them into bed. And I think that as a visitor, that is something that you should be real aware of, in terms of the bed is a barrier to your communication with the patient. So I think when you enter a room, if you can get close enough to the patient and there's a chair available, and usually there is, some of the chairs in hospital rooms are big and bulky, and you wouldn't be able to do this, but a folding chair or any kind of a chair that you can get up and pull up to the bed and sit down, so that you're eye level with the patient and you can communicate eye level, and that right away gets rid of that I'm standing over you and talking to you. The next thing I think that why visitors find it real hard in relating to patients is that every time you enter a hospital, even as a visitor, you're faced with your vulnerability as a human being. And many things that you see, you would just as soon not see because it reminds you that this could happen to anyone. I remember taking our children into a nursing home to visit a great-grandmother, and the first thing they saw was the patients were eating, and a huge mentally retarded man was sitting at a table, and he was eating peanut butter, and he looked horrible. And one of our children handled it very well and wanted to continue coming to the nursing home. Our other two children had a mental picture of this man with the peanut butter and eating that, and not ever themselves, I believe this is the problem, ever wanting to look like that themselves. So each time I think that is one of the problems, that it's our vulnerability. I think that a good approach to use when you visit somebody is to maybe just make a mental image before you go into the room and put yourself in the bed. I don't think it's hard then to imagine how you would feel if it was you that maybe didn't know what was the matter with you, or it was you that was having the testing done. Also, one of the things that patients give up often are being able to deal with very basic things, like some people that I have on our floor, I need to help with their eating, or they're not able to handle elimination anymore, and those kind of things that we take so for granted become very hard to the patient. And so that if we can somehow feel how it would be to lose some of these things, then we will be a better visitor. And we'd really like to encourage you not to run away from the images that you see in terms of being the patient yourself, because I think it's then at that point that you can have a very human exchange with another person. Okay, so how can a person be an effective visitor? I've mentioned about, first of all, breaking the bed barrier, pulling up the chair, and making both of you feel more comfortable. And hospitals are much freer today. I know Vicki, the nurse of the village, was mentioning that the hospital that she had worked, no one frowned at another person sitting on the edge of a bed with a patient. We were always in the past so afraid of germs, you bringing germs to the patient or the patient giving you germs, that I think that we made everybody feel like there had to be some distance. And in most cases, that isn't that necessary. And most of the time, if there are germs to be worried about, there's a little isolation sign on the door. And then even in those situations, there are gowns and masks and gloves to be worn that, of course, distance puts distance between you and the patient, but there are ways that you can still give love and care in those situations. In terms of communicating with the patient, I think that the best thing a person can do is watch for clues from a patient. First of all, when I go into a room after a visitor has been there, I often find a patient who is very exhausted. I think that anyone who enters a hospital to visit should be very aware that one of the problems that patients are dealing with is a lot of sleep deprivation in terms of being in the hospital anyway. They are awakened at all hours in terms of getting medication or having people check their IVs or people being paged or another patient in another room crying out. And so that they're dealing with a lot of loss of sleep by virtue of being there. They're also dealing with loss of sleep maybe because of their own anxieties, and they're also needing a lot of sleep because they're sick. So that one needs to be really sensitive to the fact that, am I tiring this person out? and to be really aware that you're there to meet that person's needs and not your own in terms of visiting. And I think a simple question of, are you getting tired? Can I come back tomorrow? Or, you know, give the patient room enough to say, I'm really getting tired now. Also in that regard, there are times that a patient really has a need to either use a bedpan or in some way have some need met that it's embarrassing for them to say, and somehow it's important for them to have room to let you know when it's time that they need a nurse, or they, I think, just to be sensitive to their needs. Something that I see really often in the hospital is a patient trying to express some anxiety to a visitor or a loved one, and I've heard it even being said, like, and as frankly as I'm feeling like I'm going to die, and then often a response will come, don't be silly, you're all right. You know, we want to so badly reassure that we don't get at what the patient is trying to tell us. Another patient of mine, her name was Nellie, really wanted to die, and every family member that came in, she said, I'm so tired, I want to die. And they kept saying, no, you don't want to die, you want to live. They wanted her to live. And they kept saying, you've got to eat, you've got to eat. Again, I think to just be very aware that your needs aren't more important than the patient's needs. Also, I think a visitor can be helpful in terms of maybe the patient is having a fear that they can't articulate to the nursing staff or their doctor. And it might be just very simple in terms of, I'm not understanding what they're going to do to me tomorrow having this test. Nobody has really explained to me what's going to happen when I go have my IVP or whatever it is. And if you, at that point, could just alert a nurse on your way out and say, you know, the patient said that they're feeling uncomfortable because they don't understand. And that would be just a way that you could be helpful. Also, I think that sometimes in the hospital, families are brought together because if someone is sick, and then I come into a room often and there is a room just full of people, and here's the patient, and everybody's talking to each other, and it's as though the patient isn't even there. My feeling is that if you're there to see the patient, then you can do your visiting to each other outside of the room, and you can make the patient feel that they're the important one. And the other thing I think is to not talk about the patient when you're doing your visiting, at least if you do, to include the patient in the conversation. Another kind of patient that I see very often on our floor are patients who have had strokes. And in that kind of a situation, the visitor who comes has something very difficult to deal with, because the loss for the patient with a stroke is very great. And depending on the severity of the stroke, it may be a greater or lesser loss. But sometimes it's that they cannot speak. And so what do you do in terms of being a visitor in that situation? And I think, again, if nothing else, to pull up a chair and to just talk to the person as if they could speak to you. And of course, you could even say to them, I wish you could respond to me. And they are wishing that they could respond to you. Say to them what you think you would like said to you if you were the patient. I don't know if any of you have seen the play Wings. But if you ever get the chance, it is the most sensitizing bit of acting I've ever seen. It's about a patient who's had a stroke and about her experience in the hospital and especially as pertains to nursing and doctor staff that comes in to see her, and how garbled their messages are to her, because she cannot get it all in her head straight. And I think that I never will approach a stroke patient in the same way after having seen that, because it was just very clear how confusing and how much a person may want to say something to you and it comes out all funny. And the patience that you need and the love and tenderness that you need to give that person, because they may regain all of this back and they may not. Strokes are very strange because the damage that is done with the initial bleeding may be permanent and it may not be. So both patient and visitor have to be very patient during that process. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is, I think, probably the very most important thing that I do in terms of nursing, and I think that it's probably the most important thing that you do as a visitor, and that is to touch the patient. I think that if you do not know a person well enough so that you feel comfortable at least touching their hand, that you might as well not come to visit. I think so much is communicated with a touch, and they are also finding in terms of healing that there is energy actually communicated in terms of a touch, and that people get well easier if they're touched. We know that in terms of children and, that never get enough loving. They do not thrive. Patients, I would say, who do not get some touching have no reason to come out of an illness. That's maybe very strongly put, but I believe that. I used to get very frustrated with the fact that the first thing that we do when we come on the floor to start a shift is that we have all these vital signs to take. And anybody who's been in the hospital knows that each shift that comes takes their temperature, blood pressure, pulse, and respiration. And it occurred to me one day that that is a really neat time to touch a person. And so that now when I take a pulse, I also just use my other hand to hold their hand. Or when I take a blood pressure, I just pat their shoulder. And it doesn't take me any more time. And it just, I believe some energy is happening there that will be helpful in the healing process. And I just think that if you're in the hospital or if your loved one's in the hospital and they're not getting a back rub once or twice a day, that you should insist on it, because it's a time where healing really takes place. Okay, now just another area in terms of visiting, how you can be helpful to the staff. I don't think that the hospitals that I have worked at are any different than most. And I think that visitors and patients should realize that not only is the patient making adjustments, but so are the nursing staff and everyone who deals with anybody in the hospital. Simply because the staffing is never perfect in hospitals. Some people float to floors in order for there to be enough staffing available. Some people are part-time. That's how I do my nursing. I do it on the same floor all the time, so there's the continuity of that. But every time I come and I haven't been there for about 5 days, I have to make a tremendous adjustment that first night. And so I think that if patients are aware of that kind of adjustment nursing is making, then they can be a little patient also. That's just one of the realities. Also, change of shifts is probably the worst time, unless you really need something or your friend that you're visiting really needs something, to ask for it, because that's when it's the most confusing in a hospital. Also, now most hospitals have what we call primary nursing care, And that simply means that most patients are assigned to a nurse who will be taking care of them for a period of days, or where it works out best is that there's a primary nurse for the entire hospitalization. So if you as visitor or patient can identify who that person is that is your primary caregiver, then you can do your relating to that person. It just saves other staff a lot of headache in terms of asking questions of a person that doesn't know anything about that patient, and it's just helpful. I think that sometimes visitors don't know how much help they can give nursing staff in terms of giving care. And I, as a nurse, feel real comfortable with one of the things that every patient needs almost if they're on bed rest is help lift, being lifted up in bed before they eat. You just cannot eat if you're like this. There's just no way. And so patients have to be lifted up. But you can also imagine if each time you go into a room and a patient has slid down in bed and you have to run and get somebody to help you, there are people light enough that I can get up in bed myself, and there's a way to do that. But a lot of people are real heavy, and you can't get them up by yourself. So I feel real comfortable if there's a loved one in the room for them just to take the other side of the draw sheet and we just lift the patient up together. Wouldn't want anybody to get an injured back doing that, but I've been in any trouble with that so far. Also, if you're visiting a loved one and you could give any help in terms of what they like as far as diet, everyday menus come around, and if the patient is unable to mark down the things that they like to eat, then they get what somebody else chooses for them. So that's just a real simple thing that you can do for a loved one. Also, on a floor like mine, we have many patients that need to be fed, and some nights I'm giving a few bites here and then going to the next room and giving a few bites there. And if you're there and the person has no trouble swallowing and the nurse could let you know that, that's a real helpful thing is in terms of helping feed patients. Or taking a person who is a long-term patient just for a ride in a wheelchair out to the lobby. Nursing staff does not have time to do that. And then another thing, that if you are not a relative, and even if you are sometimes, if you're wanting to know about results of tests and condition of the patient, that it's very hard to get that information from nursing staff because of their problem with the confidentiality of the material that they have before them. So that the best way to get information is to ask a patient. I think that there are very general things that you can ask nursing staff. But in terms of giving you information that you really need, you probably need to get that from the doctor. So if you know that, then you don't need to do a lot of inquiring that the nursing staff can't give. Also, it's very helpful if you're a close friend or a relative that needs to be notified in case of a change of condition that you leave a phone number. Nursing staff really wants loved ones to be on hand if there's any change in the patient. And so that's just kind of a thoughtful way to help facilitate wholeness for the patient in terms of crisis, to have family there.
And then, doesn't the head nurse have that?
She does, but sometimes, like if you were going to stay with a child, for instance, for the night, and then you're not at the number that you have given, then there's a lot of scrambling around for how can I get in touch with this patient's loved one. Another thing that I want to talk about is the dying patient. Probably the most significant nursing that I have done is in terms of patients who are dying. And I think that probably all of you have heard about Kubler-Ross's work with the dying and the different stages that she has documented. And one of the last stages is where the resolving of terminal illness and them choosing a very significant person. And if you are chosen as that significant person to share that experience with a patient, count yourself as privileged. The first time that I had any experience with someone dying was when I was a student. And it was a woman who had a heart attack, and she had so many difficulties that they just could not do anything except make her comfortable. But I sat with her husband, and we knew that she was dying. And it was the most beautiful experience, I think, that I've ever had. This man just was recalling to his wife all the experiences of their life together, and she no longer could respond to him in any way. The other thing that he did in terms of giving her care was to just go to the sink and get a wash rag and get it cool and put it on her forehead. And it was one of the most touching things I've ever experienced, because it was a glimpse of their life and their love together. And to be able to give care to someone in terms of their last experiences of life, I think is something that I feel real thankful I've been able to do. We talked about the stroke patient and to talk to them, even though they may not be able to talk back to you, or if they are in coma and near death also, do not underestimate their power to hear you. Nursing staff in a hospital takes very seriously that that is the last sense to go. The other sense that they feel people have until the very end is that of touch. So you can be loving and talking to someone who is dying until the time they die. And as I say, if you're privileged enough to be a part of somebody's death, count it as something very special. It isn't that it doesn't hurt you. It hurts. It hurts me every time one of our patients die. But I just feel that it is a life experience that we all will experience, and to have someone there that loves you is really important. And the last thing I want to talk about in terms of caring for somebody as far as a patient goes, there's something in most hospitals, and we call it no codes. If a patient is a no code, that means that they will not be resuscitated if they get into trouble and they're dying. This is really an important thing for staff and the resuscitation teams to have as far as orders from doctors, because if somebody gets in trouble and they are not a no code, they have to be resuscitated. I guess the cruelest thing I've ever seen in hospitals is somebody who has been very, very sick for a long time, has no chance to live a whole life anymore, and they begin to die, or they do stop breathing, their heart stops beating, and the resuscitation team has to come and code them and bring them back. And medical skills are such that you can bring back people, and you can bring them back many times. And with what I'm trying to say to you all is that if you love someone, you need to talk to them about their wishes regarding how many times do I want to be resuscitated? Under what conditions do I not want to be resuscitated? And you need to communicate that to the doctor. The doctor needs to write it in his doctor's orders, or all the forces of the hospital go to work in terms of saving life until they just cannot be saved any longer. That's not a real happy note to end on, but I think because you love someone, don't let them suffer beyond what they should suffer. And so just consider that if you have someone in the hospital. what my hopes are is that you will help me to know if I'm accurate in terms of how I've seen patients, in terms of you as having been a patient or you as visitors, what you've had difficulty dealing with. So if we could just have some discussion now.
I have one question.
Yes.
You were saying what we shouldn't do if someone says they want to die.
Mm-hmm.
What should we do?
Okay. People have said that to me, and usually on the occasions that it has happened, I try to ask them more first. I try very hard to not do what I would be inclined to do, and that's to say, life is worth living. Come on, let's live it to the fullest. And most of the times that has happened to me is the person is wanting to die or feeling like they might die because they have a real reason to think that. Many people who approach surgery, though, have some of these feelings. And it's very important in those situations for the person to be able to verbalize those fears. And in those cases, I talk about the fact that, you're fearful. And what particularly are you fearful about? Is it the anesthesia or is it the surgery itself? Sometimes it's just, again, that they need clarifying. And some people are so sick that they really do want to die. And that's a whole different thing. And they should have the right at that point to talk about. And then I guess I try to somehow get in that bed again and say, something to the effect of, you really have suffered a lot. To not minimize what they're saying and the pain of what they've said.
That's what I was going to say too. I agree with you totally that if someone says that they feel, are trying to express the feeling that they honestly have, that they wish they could die, I think it's most important to basically communicate that you have received that message. That somehow you got that message that they really feel that way. A feeling is a feeling. If a person has it, you can't ever talk them out of it. Mm-hmm. It's their feeling. And what you need to do is to be able to share that feeling. I mean, the best way to get them through that is to be able to give it away, so to speak. And so it's like you taking that feeling from them. I mean, it's like, I can imagine how you might feel that way. And that's a bit time to maybe consider reading scripture or something. I mean, helping them find some peace, but not by telling them how they shouldn't feel that.
Arguing with them.
Exactly.
Yeah, many of us, I think, feel that we need to either provide information or somehow give an answer to a, and there isn't any. There isn't any kind of an answer for that. And all you can do is really let them know that you really care about them as a human being and are hearing them. Yeah, I think that's exactly what people want most of the time, is to know that they're being heard.
It's probably important, too, to not necessarily, but don't go so far as to say, if I were you, I'd feel that way, too.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
I think that may be both what I'm saying, but that won't help either.
There have been times when I wanted to almost say, yes, I can see your life is the pit. I forgot to mention, in terms of all that you can learn from people who are in the hospital, because they're having an experience that you may someday face, most likely will, and they can be your teachers. Also, sometimes I'm so surprised by what people say in terms of their coping ability, and I remember one man who I think he's the sickest man I have ever seen. And his heart was functioning so poorly that his legs were, they reminded me of like an elephant's legs. And I wanted to somehow communicate to him that I felt bad that he was suffering so much. And I said something to the effect of, I'm sorry that you're having to go through this. And his response to me was, yes, but the Lord lifts me up on wings. That was just such an unexpected response from someone who I thought had every right to be really angry, and somehow he was coping because he had a really religious orientation to life, and the Lord was, in fact, lifting him.
One of the most helpful things that happened to me, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks and not expected to live, but one friend sent me some of the most wonderful Bible passages on cards. She said she realized it would be difficult for me to hold the Bible, but that these were passages that had been so comforting to her in time of illness. And I just went through those over and over and over again. And I thought, what a marvelous thing for anybody to do for somebody who is seriously ill in the hospital.
Really. That was one thing that I saw at Cabrini Hospital, how much a Catholic person has in terms of their rosary. And many people clutch the rosary all the time and could... you know, say their prayers even when they weren't saying their prayers, kind of. And somehow we Protestants don't have quite that kind of a symbol to hang on to. And Bible verses on cards would help.
We talked about being with a dying patient, you know, the loved ones, the family. What happens when this person is in an intensive care unit and you're allowed in there 5 minutes on the odd hour, this kind of thing? Do you request that the person be removed from the intensive care unit? Do you go against hospital regulations? What do you do?
I really can't speak well to that, and maybe somebody else can, because I work on a floor that if you're terminal, that's where you go. And there are people, obviously, who die in intensive care. And most people in intensive care, I think they're usually doing everything they can to help this person to live.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, if you're in a position of being like a no code, dude, most people would say you don't belong in intensive care unit.
Happened to be with my mother, and she was definitely a no code. They didn't, you know, it was a heart attack.
But she was in intensive care.
Comatose, yeah, for 30 years.
She was misplaced.
It was a 5 minutes on the odd hour. That's hard. I just wondered, you know, could you go to a doctor and say, I don't like this, I would, you know.
That's another thing.
Unfortunately, you have to go yourself and say that. Nobody else will.
I guess that's my plea in terms of you. I think that's too bad. The onus of responsibility has to go to the patient and the family in terms of a no code. But, you know, the oath that doctors take in terms of life, they take very seriously. And it's difficult unless you are an intermediary for that family. But in terms of patients' rights, patients do have rights. And if you're a family that is not feeling happy about something that's happening in the hospital, it is your right to have some clarification or to make some changes. And I think in your situation,
I think eased the whole situation was a nurse. I don't know her, I never met her, but I would say similarly to what you'd be like, because she wrote us all a letter afterwards and told us exactly what occurred in the time before her death. And she'd been with her, and you know, it was really just one other question. Some of us here are on a Christian carrying committee in our church, and you mentioned that, you know, if you don't know the person well enough to touch them, you know, how do you feel about, you know, we're from a congregation of 3,700 people, and Christian carrying doesn't know everyone, and we do have a crisis type thing where they visit hospitalized people. How do you go then when you come into a total stranger's room, you know, as a member of the church or representation from the church?
Okay, I guess I should clarify that by saying I don't think there's another person that you can't touch.
I'd say make it brief. I've been in enough times. And sometimes you're better off without calls that the people don't understand. I've had people come in and they say, oh, you're doing so good after serious surgery, and mm-hmm. you stay.
They don't know.
And I've had to ask for a hypo afterwards.
Right.
Yeah, that is a real reality that
we
get very tired
But we do have some information about the patient and mm-hmm. you know what the situation is, and you know it isn't total.
But touching, I think, is a wonderful thing, and nurses have touching and nice words of tender, loving care. And I'm going to visit in Portland, and there's a nurse, who's a widow now, that the last time I had a resection of the main aorta with a aneurysm the size of a grapefruit, and I've been in a long time, and I can still remember the sweetest words of her patting me on the cheek and said, Virgil, honey, and to me, that turns into another word. She's in the phone book, because I think that we're helpless. We're helpless, and just a little kind word mm-hmm. could lift your spirit at all. It makes recovery.
Would you like that touching from a stranger?
Well, I didn't know her that well. I knew her husband.
Uh-huh. But, I mean, she was
I think it's. I don't think it makes that much difference. And if people know about it, because there's other nurses that, in time that have used the same kind of language and things, and it meant just as much to me.
Well, she was in the capacity of a nurse, but we're talking about like a visitor from your church or something. That
a handshake is another.
Yeah.
You know, you handshake a stranger,
okay.
and I think at least that much is a. Okay. Fulfills what you're talking about.
I work in a nursing home, and the same thing applies here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just a touch on the shoulder.
It's good to see you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, for sure.
And calling, and if a little word of prayer is short, but if you know the person, just touch your hand
mm-hmm.
when you have prayer. If there's others in a room, mm-hmm. There's something.
That's a good point, too.
But there's times when I don't think the chemistry's right. That's true. I just don't think.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what I was trying to say about being sensitive. Mm-hmm. There was one patient that I had, and my ego was really hurt by this, because usually I can get people to enjoy my nursing care. This little man could not understand me. I don't know, in terms of how I talk, he could not hear me, and he was just enraged every time I went in the room. Well, it became real clear that I wasn't to be his nurse, because I wasn't healing him. I was making his recovery harder. So another nurse took him. If you see that that you are making it hard for somebody, then your ego has to be put aside and just say, wish them care and help, but leave.
I think there's one subject we haven't touched, and there are times when we have to go into the hospital, and you can't have a private room. So you have to go in, and there are generally two.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you are sicker, or they are sicker than you are. And then someone comes in to visit them, and they just carry on,
mm-hmm.
talk and laugh, and you it just gets you so you could just want to mm-hmm. scream. And I think that's one place where we could be pretty... thinking of the other patient.
Mm-hmm.
It could be you, or it could be the other patient. Mm-hmm. I've had that experience in my life. It's very trying.
It's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yes.
A friend of mine fell, had an accident. He fell and he was in a coma. And he was in a coma for several weeks and in intensive care. He was very, seemed if it weren't for machines there were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have been any life in the room, and yet when he came out of it, and it was a slow process of healing. But he remembered some of the things that were said to him while he was in the coma. So that
mm-hmm.
really is important.
Mm-hmm.
And there was my wife and I visited him, and a nurse in the intensive care said something within about. Brother's no sense in your staying here. He can't hear you anyway. And we said,
mm-hmm.
We objected to that attitude
mm-hmm.
without knowing for sure whether she was right or wrong. But we objected to the attitude, and later
mm-hmm.
He verified that he remembered things that were said and people that had visited him while he was in intensive care.
That's really a mystery, isn't it? Yeah. Because like when you go to sleep, you aren't aware of things, and
yeah.
So it's a different kind of a thing.
Oftentimes in dealing with people like that, you don't think they know, and you ask them to squeeze your hand that they understand. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they will, but they'll squeeze your hand. Mm-hmm. But still you can't communicate.
So I think it's important to speak hope.
Yes, yes.
With someone in that situation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yes.
A couple things, and of course that ties in with sensitivity. Sense of humor. I mean, you have to know with whom and how you mm-hmm. can use that. But mm-hmm. I think we can be overly sympathetic. You know,
oh, for sure, for sure.
We're so sick. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. not even if we're not saying that, conveying that by our facial expressions or our tone of voice and all.
And that's why someone that loves another person knows the things that you've already laughed about. That's why that mm-hmm. was so significant to be the listener when that man was reviewing their life together. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, it was not sad. I mean, of course the situation was he was going to have great loss, but, you know, it was wonderful.
And even with a friend, you can do that, reminisce over fun times that you've had.
Remember,
just for sure. I mean, well, not behave yourself. You know, somebody's strapped down and you can't do anything else. They can enjoy that. You know, now don't go too far.
I mean,
kinds of things that kind of lighten.
I think
laughter is good medicine.
Good medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been proven also.
Yes. Norman Cates has written extensively about it.
Yes.
What do you say to a patient when I had the experience with what would you suggest when someone goes in for a cancer operation and you don't know just what condition it is and they come and visit you and you can just tell there's a feeling of what do I say, you know, to that patient mm-hmm. because you know what their thoughts are in the
you mind. Mean you're the patient in mm-hmm. this case?
I think it's a kind of a I've had cancer, so I know, mm-hmm. but I think it's just as hard on the patient as those if the patient can make it feel at home, mm-hmm. it's fine, but if you don't...
Yeah, that is another burden then to place on the patient.
You don't know whether you're saying the right thing or the mm-hmm. wrong thing. Yeah. It's kind of hard to go in and talk to a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. It is hard. And I don't know that I have a good answer for that.
No, it's kind of hard.
My husband and I had a personal experience with that a few months ago. A good friend of ours was dying of cancer, brain tumor. And then he discovered he had cancer all through his body. And I was scared to go up and see mm-hmm. him, but my husband insisted. He wasn't going to insist, but I went along with him, mm-hmm. scared, kind of. And he walked in his room, and he was happy. He was ready to go and meet his daughter, mm-hmm. and he put us at ease
mm-hmm.
with the way he talked.
I guess you could, I don't think you should anticipate any certain behavior, and probably as visitor accept any that mm-hmm. You receive, because there's a lot of anger that people have too, and it is not bad behavior that they're angry.
His expression was, no matter what I do, if I go to meet my Lord or if I stay here, either way I win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're young and you have, or you're married to children, it's a little different. And mm-hmm. if you're old, I think you could accept it easily. Mm-hmm. But when you're young, you feel like you have so much to.
Other people are depending on you. I think that's the worry. Who's going to take care of my children and my family?
You know, your comment brings to mind the fact that many times the person doing the visit has more to gain out of the time spent than the person who's getting visited. I mean, I think we lose sight of that, but there is a lot that they can contribute to you. The sick person can contribute to you.
Just a week later, he was gone.
Hospice is doing such marvelous work now, and doing a lot of good training in how to deal with the dying patient.
agree with that.
I think one of the problems of visitors is our own fear of illness and death. Mm-hmm. And the more that we've come to grips with that, and pain, mm-hmm. the more we're able to be ourselves and to minister. I know my parents died when I was in my teens. They both died in the hospital, and the smell of the hospital, the anesthetic, and everything is spotless and clean, and there's a certain odors that I really act differently in a hospital setting. Mm-hmm. And it's my own problem, but that communicates. I've been, you know, when I'm visiting someone, so I think to some extent we've gotten past that, but it's still a problem. The more I think that we're sensitive to our own feelings and reactions,
mm-hmm. for sure,
or to particular diseases, that, mm-hmm. The more aware we are, the more we can balance that out and how we relate to the patient, to our friend or relative.
Yeah.
I had a really elderly lady tell me once, "I'm not afraid of dying, but I'm so afraid of being sick enough to die."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to reinforce, Emily, that you asked a question a while ago about whether it was correct or not correct about touching. Well, reviewing time slot backwards now, in the time era of Hitler's real big experiments, they had the human race going on the super crit, right? Okay. Never touched by a human being. The child, they never got one to live beyond 24 months. Never. And they had them by the thousands. Antiseptically clean. There's a doctor in the corner there, by, you know what I'm saying?
The babies.
But they never could. But the child was never spoken to, never touched by a human skin. Okay?
It's a sense, I think, that we forget the power of. Thank you very much.
Thank you.